A different future starts with you. That's why GoDaddy does more than help you find a name. You can create, sell, and get found online so any small business can make a change. We need a new generation of thinking. Your way of thinking. Start different at GoDaddy.com.
If you've recovered from COVID-19 or unknowingly been exposed to it, you may have antibodies that could help COVID-19 patients. Donate blood and receive testing for COVID-19 antibodies. Visit Vitalant.org today.
This is an ode to the glass noodle. You may be glass only in name, but our love for you is crystal clear in every Bibigo Korean dumpling. Your tantalizing texture tickles the taste buds, and while you are see-through, the world can't help but see you. The glass noodle, one of many obsessively crafted ingredients in every plump and juicy Korean dumpling from Bibigo. Go handcrafted. Go Bibigo. Authentic Korean dumplings now in the freezer aisle.
This is Podco Media Networks.
It's the Innovation Podcast with Mark Reed Edwards and Garnett Harriman. Let's start the show.
Hi, it's Mark. We're back with Emanuele Dal Carlo of Fairbnb. This time we learn more about the co-op model that Fairbnb is employing, plus how Emanuele ended up in the co-op, how Fairbnb engages with brand ambassadors, Emanuele's marketing plans, and lots more. So let's get back to the discussion.
Let's talk a little bit about something that I think, like a lot of our North American and certainly American listeners may not be so familiar with, and that's the cooperative model, the co-op model.
Yes.
You know, we have some history with that word in this country. You know, people associate it with unions.
Yeah.
There's a flavor of cooperative that has to do with food distribution in this country.
Yes.
You know, it's associated, that type of food distribution used to be associated with, like, I hate to say it, but hippies.
Yeah.
People living on communes, and, you know.
Yeah, I understand.
People like Mark Reed Edwards, who have their own sovereign territories that they live on. I think Mark has his own food cooperative that he runs, you know, with an iron fist.
It's called Wegmans.
or Ralph's or whatever, right? It's like, you know. But, you know, all kidding aside, there isn't a lot of familiarity with the business model of a cooperative. So maybe you could just spend a few minutes talking a little bit about that.
Yes. Well, I think that those kind of cooperatives you talk about, obviously, the main difference with the normal company is that there are no literally equities. I mean, everybody has one vote in the assembly, no matter how much capital is put in. And this is something that for people used to equities and unicorns and exits and stuff like that, and venture capital sounds really weird. But it actually creates a very...
Just to be clear, it's one person, one vote versus $1, one vote.
Exactly.
Okay.
For example, in our cooperative, we have a little space for investors, which can have maximum of 30% of the votes of the cooperative. And within the 30%, it works like from the amount of capital. So the capital, the actual investor cannot take over the company. It's a strange concept, but it works. I mean, in Italy, we have massive cooperatives. There are real proper companies. I mean, they're a massive organization with tens of thousands of employees in all sectors, basically, from industrial production to services. We have, for example, one of my clients in my advertising agency is one of the biggest cooperatives in Italy. It's got 1 billion euro turnaround, and is running restaurants for corporations, and is a cooperative. So is a misconception that is that kind of hippie-ish thing. It applies perfectly to the world, but is also a good way of making money. The only difference is that the governance is more distributed, is more open. If you create, in like we are trying to do in the future, a multi-stakeholder company, you can include your customers and your suppliers in the democracy of the things. It's a very interesting approach. I don't come from the cooperative world. My company is a normal limited. And I always been working with even corporations.
Wait a second. How is it that a capitalist like yourself ended up in a cooperative like Airbnb? Why didn't they stop you at the front door?
They tried. No, I'm joking. I tried to stop them. To be completely honest, I didn't believe in the cooperative. But
now the truth comes out.
But I have to say that I was wrong. It's another word I'm learning by doing it. And I have been able to bring my business experience in a seamless way because it's actually a company and it works like a company. The only thing is that you cannot use the brute force of your equity to take decision in a board, an assembly, but you have actually to work hard to come out with the best solution that accommodate all the needs. And I believe that in the long term, especially in our business, that's going to be a lifesaver because it's going to help us stay true to our values and not to sell out. And that's going to give the kind of investor we are seeking, which are mainly impact investor, a lot of credibility, and also to our customers, because our customers know that the money they give to our cooperative, and then they're not going to be used like to pay expensive holidays and cars for the manager and stuff like that, but they are going to use to pay good wages for everybody, from the first entry, from the stages to the top management. We have the cap wage policy and stuff like that. So it's a way more relaxed corporate environment in a way. It's much more difficult, a lot more red tapes. But I think that for a project like ours will pay off. And it's something worth experimenting, especially with platform cooperativism. I think that that's going to be the next big revolution in our capitalistic world, because it's not really working very well, isn't it, at the end of the day? It's working for some, but it's not working for everybody. And the fact that it's not working for everybody is also affecting the few people that is capitalism is working for. So we're coming to an age in our development as Western civilization, which we realize that actually putting money only on one little percentage of the population, it doesn't work anymore. It's starting to create a lot of problems, a lot of friction, a lot of things happening around the world that we already seen 70 years ago and we don't want to see again. Rise of right-wing extremism, nationalism, people starting to barking like dogs at each other across borders. And the problem behind it is that wealth is not distributed. I don't want to say evenly. I want to say equitably.
Equitably, yeah. A lot of the challenge in communicating an innovation to a wider audience is just finding a point of common ground and, God forbid, like lowest common denominator, right? That you can communicate to many people. Is it true that the cooperative business model is the business model that is used for certain soccer teams or football? Europeans call it football teams around the European Union. Okay. I had heard something about the Barcelona team or certain other football teams that were owned as a cooperative.
You know, I never heard about that. I should research. I like football, but not to the point of studying their business structure behind it. But it's actually a very good way of involving your customers. We have, for example, cooperatives works very well for a supermarket, retail store, because the customer is very, very faithful to the brand.
Yeah,
he knows where the product is sourced. So it could work in football. I mean, in brand that is high engagement with his customer, it could work really well. So I wouldn't be surprised if a football team would choose that. I know it works for small teams because it actually is like creating a very wide support, economical, actually fun support the team.
Yep.
So, but I didn't know biggest team was. I'm going to research that.
I just did some internet research and I found that FC Barcelona is a cooperative with more than 175,000 members.
There you go.
Wow.
So now when you change your brand messaging, you can put a footnote to me on that one. and a second footnote to Mark Reed Edwards for doing the research that validates my crappy memory.
Yeah. Well, there are also a lot of banks, not only in Italy but in Spain as well, which are cooperative.
Oh,
an insurance company.
Somewhere in the back of my head, I knew that, especially Italian banks. Yeah.
Yeah, and our bank, the bank we use, is a cooperative, and their approach with us as a client is completely different. They actually give us better condition because what we do than a normal client, and it is because they know we're going to have an impact on the people that is their account holder. So it's like feeding into each other, this world. And I'm telling you, I mean, I think that in 5-10 years, platform comparatives, cooperativism in general is going to become like a big answer to the problems that we are facing now.
Yeah, we have a lot of banks in America that are uncooperative. It's kind
of well, especially when you ask money, isn't it?
Apparently, yeah, we're speaking with Emanuele Del Carlo, and Mark and I are pleasantly surprised. We thought he was an expert on marketing and sustainable travel, and now we realize he's a global banking expert too.
I mean, I'm expert in not being able to have the banks giving me money. That.
Join the club. Yeah.
There you go. But they'll only give you money if you have money.
Exactly. When you don't need it, they're all over you.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
COVID-19 patients need your help.
If you've fully recovered from COVID-19
or unknowingly been exposed to it,
you may have the antibodies that could help COVID-19 patients recover.
Donate blood and receive testing for COVID-19 antibodies.
Visit Vitalant.org today to schedule an appointment to donate blood.
That's Vitalant.org. Help save lives and schedule your appointment at Vitalant.org.
You could help save lives.
So we've talked about some of the differentiators and the sort of the philosophy of the co-op model and some of the unusual places where you might find the co-op model, and that's great. Tell us a little bit more about how Airbnb as an organization has been funded so far, what your plans are for, at the end of the day, you still need money to
obviously
run the operations, yes, and to grow and get the message out and get more and more property owners, exactly, and hosts on the platform. So tell us more about the plan for getting more resources, including capital resources.
Exactly. Allora, but first of all, we've been very lucky. We've not spent a single penny in marketing and advertising, because for two main reasons. We have members that do that and invest with their work in it. And also, we had an amazing response from journalists and people like yourself that are interested in the concept. So the word has spread up to now, and people reaching us to us. They want to become host or just user. We have more than 4,000 pre-registered users without investing 1 cent. And we have a press review, which is like 10 pages longer. We've not issued a single press release. We never asked for attention. It's just that the concept like has gone on its own. So that's helped a lot, keeping the overhead down and to concentrate and focus our investment in the creation of an MVP, a minimum viable product, which we are about to launch in mid 5 pilot cities. So all the money that we as members have put in the company, which is sums up to a little bit more than 100K, is being invested in paying development, and we're going to see, and research, of course, with regulation and local administration, and we're going to see the first results. Then we have won the possibility to ask for a very low interest loan from an ethical bank in Italy, Banca Etica, which is around 400K, which is going to be available for us in the near future, in September. And then we are applying for a contribution from the Italian Ministry of Industrial Development that has got a plan for entering an innovative cooperative up to 49% of their investor capital. Then we have small investors coming to us, people that want to just enter with 4K, 50K, 20K is coming to us asking how they can do it. We do the onboarding process. And that's it at the moment. But we are also talking with foundations around the world that are interested in sustain an enterprise that is caring about sustainable travel, and we are open to discuss with everybody. We don't have ideological approach. We can partner with companies, with corporations, just to share the values and the goals. But because we don't have a problem with making money, actually we want to make money, just we have a problem how to use them. And we want to use them to foster a circular economy in communities.
You have an interesting thing that we've talked about offline, and I want to just throw it into the mix here. You have brand ambassadors around Europe in different places, and I think maybe Australia as well. How do you engage with brand ambassadors, and what do they do on behalf of the Fairbnb Cooperative Network? And how has your experience been thus far with that notion of spreading the message?
Well, we are lucky, really blessed, to have a lot of people that is reaching to us, and they have network, and they kind of open their network for us. But also, we know that this like cannot last forever, and for us it's only fair that we find a way to include these persons also in a process that create opportunities for them as well. So we also have a plan of partnership that we can open for people that becomes our activators in a specific destination. We work we customize, let's say, our approach with every community and every territory and every particular, even thematic nodes, in a very characteristic way. We don't want to be closed to any potential collaboration. Today I was in London and I was speaking with this amazing organization, which I cannot mention, obviously, because I'm not allowed to, but we're actually trying to work on a thematic partnership on a specific theme, which is actually, let's say, sustainable experience around the world. And with them, we're trying to work out what could be the best plan that can bring value to them and value to us. So for us, these people that become ambassadors for us, they can do it like most of them do at the beginning, like kind of freely spreading the word. But then there is room, if we find the right way for them, the right way for us, to also transform this in a work opportunity for a lot of people around the world. Because we prefer actually to pay people that is committed to our project instead of paying clicks on Google or on Facebook. So if we have human beings that are able to galvanize their network around our brand, that's going to be an impressive force compared to just basic click-through strategy. That's the way we want to go.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, it's a breath of fresh air in this world. And it doesn't sound like you're completely antithetical to, you know, some of these traditional digital business strategies, but you're not willing. So at some point you might be, you know, advertising online, or God forbid, or doing a sponsorship, but you're basically not willing to make that, you know, the foundation of your brand messaging plan.
Exactly.
That's a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, we're not against anything, but we are pro some another way. I mean, we're going to use probably Facebook advertising. We're going to probably use Google clicks and stuff like that. There's no shame in that. But
no.
Comparing that to the fate, or having maybe in the near future, even few hundreds of people that talk well, really talk well with their friends and family and bigger networks and work colleagues, and they create opportunities for your brand because they believe in it. Because also maybe they're even economically motivated, but not only economically motivated because they feel part of the brand, because we are open, we are a cooperative, so we can accept members from all around the world. That's going to be for us our main goal. We want to grow through communities. After all, if we create local nodes, and this is what we are trying to do here in London, actually tomorrow we got a meeting with around 20 people that they're gonna meet up with us and work out if we can open a local node in London, is actually working through the community project. The community projects have an amazing force. I mean, they're already involved, they're already bringing good things to the people, and if they partner with us because they want to receive funds, they're going to become the first activators for us.
That's great. That's great. So I think it's time to start sort of end capping and winding our discussion down. It's been a great talk so far. We've covered a lot of ground, and you know, a lot of what you're saying is so enlightening and so refreshing. It's very innovative, and we're thrilled to have you. What we like to do on most of our interviews is ask the esteemed guest and thought leader to go out on a limb a little bit and make a couple of predictions about the future.
Oh my God.
It could be about anything. It could be straight business, you know, related to what you're an expert in. You could pick the next, World Cup winner or whatever.
Well, World Cup winner, if you're talking about football, definitely Italy. But I will not make prediction about Airbnb, because that's going to be, first it's going to be lame, and then as an entrepreneur, I know that they never work prediction. Things either surprise you or disappoint you in business. So the business plan, I've never seen a business plan fall page by page by the real events.
Sure.
So what I want to focus is what we were talking about. My prediction is that, because I'm an optimist, and I think that in general, human beings, excuse my French, are not hustles. They're not bad people in general. I think that we are on the, really on the verge, on the brink to see a new way. And we're going to turn our back on the bad things that we are smelling in the air. And I really believe that the world is going to turn for good. Like, I'm not saying overnight, but reverting to platform comparativism is a big sign. More and more companies are thinking about it. Deal organizations are emerging all over the world. I mean, we see all these kids every Friday in the streets protesting for climate change. There is a reaction to it, but is weaker than the power of the people that want to see positive change in the society. And if there's not any major disruptive event in the near future that bring us back to the nightmares of the 20th century, I think that we're going to see a far better world in the next years.
Well, I'm super optimistic. I think that the one thing you really need to watch out for is, I want to make sure that you are nowhere near any of the docks where the mega cruise ships dock in Venice, because I would hate to see such a thought leader like you get crushed between the mega cruise ship and the dock. We've had a couple of close calls in our beloved Venezia in the last month or so, and
Don't worry.
I have a vested interest in making sure that you stay alive to see this prediction come to pass.
Thank you.
Thank you so
much. I was in the Navy when I was young, so I will stay away.
thank you.
I know my way around ships.
Hey, in a worst case scenario, jump in the water.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Emanuele Dal Carlo, one of the founders of Airbnb, for being with us.
All right, next time we have Tyler Lorenzen of Puris, a company that is providing a key ingredient in meatless protein, pea protein. Soon we have Ryan Merkley of Creative Commons joining us. Other discussions about the world of 21st century agriculture in Appalachia, F1, facial recognition, the food business, and more are all in the works. But next time, Tyler Lorenzen of Puris.
Thanks for joining Garnett and Mark on the Innovation Podcast. Visit theinnovationpodcast.co to subscribe and listen to other episodes.